Welcome back to another episode of the Resorters Radio Podcast. In this edition, Greg and I will review all the latest Disney news and rumors, including the new parking at Magic Kingdom, and a rumor about Epcot's Interventions West, and the originators of the WDW 46 Challenge. Ted Tambo and Shane Lindsay from Parkiology stop by the show. Get yours on. This edition of Resort Ears Radio, June 24th, 2015, launches now. All right, welcome to the studios, everybody. It's good to have everybody in. We're going to do things a little bit different today. We're actually going to go right to our interviews because we have two awesome people that are going to be on our show right now. And we want to get them on because we are so darn excited. We have Ted and Shane from Parkiology. They have done the WDW 46 Rise in One Day Challenge. Shane and Ted, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks. We're doing well. Great to be here, everybody.
Hey, guys. Thanks for thanks again for joining us. Thanks. So you guys have been featured on CNN, Fox News, The Daily Mail, Orlando Sentinel, just to name a few. And now you add to that esteemed list of media outlets, the Resorters Radio Podcast.
Been saving the best for last.
And the very high tech, very together Resorters Radio Podcast. So
hey, we're ranked up there, so don't take us down yet.
So anyway, Mike, I'll start this off. How did you guys meet? I mean, this thing's pretty crazy. How did you two meet? Wow. That's pretty...
There's actually a whole bunch of message boards on AOL back then. This is before browsers, obviously. And there was like a little clique of us, I guess, that hung out. We kind of collected a board on a transition board and bounced around a few different places. And you know, Ted and I both had like a really obsessive and kind of crazy interest in theme parks. And especially the Disney theme parks. And I think we both had this sense of humor,
and
so we would just, you know, make joke back and forth on the message boards, talk about whatever news there was, and, you know, just had a friendship that developed over the years.
That's pretty cool, because now, Shane, you're down in Orlando, right? And Ted, you're out in Midwest?
I'm in Chicago, right.
Right. Wow. That's great. So how did this whole crazy idea to do the challenge get started?
It all started many years ago. Actually, what WDW 46 was, is it grew out of this childhood obsession I had. You know, I actually grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana, and you know, with my brother, my two sisters, and my parents. You know, growing up would always take us down to Florida, just about once a year. We'd make that drive, a 16.5-hour drive from Indiana down to Orlando, and we'd always go to Disney, at least one day while we were here. Only for one day while we were here. And I fell in love with the theme parks during that time, you know, going every year. And when we first started, it was just Magic Kingdom, and then Epcot came along in 1982. And my family would continue to make this drive, and we would still just go to Disney, but it was only for one day. So you can imagine that as a, you know, Disney park geek, you know, growing up, that was the day I looked forward to all year long. And, you know, it was my one day a year where I get to be in the parks. And so I really just became obsessed with trying to maximize what I did. You know, I wanted to see every ride, see every show, do everything, and just sort of develop that obsession over the years. And, you know, Disney didn't really cooperate because they kept adding more theme parks and more things to do. So, you know, know, by the time I'm in high school, and the Disney MGM Studios is open, there's, you know, there's three theme parks, and I'm still just going there for one day a year, and it really wasn't until my honeymoon, when I finally got married out of college, that I actually managed to spend, like, a week on property and stay on property and see everything, and, you know, I told my wife when we got married, you know, I'm going to see everything while we're on our honeymoon, and she agreed, and, you know, and it was great, but then our marriage, you know, kind of got off to a rocky start, because there we were on the last day of our honeymoon, and there was one ride left that I hadn't seen, which was the Mike Steen keelboats, and I sort of, like, forced her into a 45-minute keelboat line in the middle of June, and, you know, don't know if that got us off on the
ride. Wow.
But then eventually, you know, flash forward, I now live in Orlando, and I no longer have to be that kind of crazy about seeing everything, so I can go whenever I want. But
sure.
The idea always just stuck with me. Hey, I wonder if it's possible to see everything in a single day, like, you know, like I used to have to do. And you get into some crazy stuff, like, well, what constitutes as seeing an attraction? You know, there are shows, obviously, that have these weird world showcase exhibits, and, you know, what really counts as an attraction? And I kind of hit upon this idea that the ride is the most pure type of attraction. If it moves, it's a ride. And we went out on Disney's website and we said, you know, they have 40, well, at the time there was 47 rides based on their official list of attractions. And so I kind of just proposed this idea, hey, we'll try to do this gimmick, you know, to help, you know, just for fun, because it's kind of an insane little challenge to see if we can ride all 47 rides in a single day. And that's really how it got started.
Shane has this, you know, kind of heartwarming story of a child's dream, whereas I just like to do stupid stuff.
Well, then you'll fit right in on this podcast, that's for sure.
There you go.
So, I have a question. You guys here?
Yeah.
How did you get to think of seeing it? All those, I picked you up. How did you guys react when you were actually doing those trips?
I'm sorry, I can't really make out what you're saying there, Mike.
Go ahead, Greg.
Mike was just asking, what was your reaction when, like, these big media outlets like CNN, you know, came to ask you guys to talk about the challenge?
Right. Well, that was, you know, that definitely struck us as a surprise. So in 2013, we made our first attempt at it, and weather ended up raining out the last two rides of the night. They got shut down, so we were unable to achieve it. But at that time, the Orlando Sentinel picked up the story and actually ran a fairly long story about it. And, you know, we got a little bit of press that way, and mm-hmm. some really oddball things like the in-flight magazine for Norwegian Airlines, all places, you know, ran a story. And we pretty much thought that would be that. We ended up doing the WDW 46 last November and successfully completed it. And the Sentinel again ran an article, which then sort of got some steam behind it, got picked up by the local CBS station in
That's a crazy story. Tell us about, just to kind of lay the groundwork for our listeners who may have been kind of living in a hole the past couple of years and hadn't heard about you guys or the challenge. What if you can, I know it's they're pretty long, but can you kind of just surmise the rules for our listeners of what actually constitutes the WDW 46 challenge.
Yeah, I can cover that. So the 46 challenge is basically, in a nutshell, it's riding every ride in Disney World across all of their four theme parks in a single operating day. And we really, so the list of 46 rides came directly from DisneyWorld.com's list of attractions. We went through that list, and if it was on that list, and it had a ride vehicle of some kind where you moved, that was, that's a ride, and you have to ride it. So that includes everything from the obvious things like Spaceship Earth and Splash Mountain, down to just things that most people don't even realize were there, like the Main Street vehicles, which are these little horse trolleys that go up and down Main Street.
Right.
And include things like Carousel of Progress, which is a rotating theater attraction, and things like that. So that's where the list of the 46 rides came from. And we said it has to be something that an average, everyday guest could complete with no help, with no outside help. Our big rule was no cheating on this. So you're allowed to use FastPass because every guest has access to FastPass. You're allowed to use extra magic hours because the resort guests all have extra magic hours available. But you can't have, your friends going and getting you fast passes, or you can't have somebody driving you in a private chauffeur around property.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, was transportation-wise, could you have a buddy waiting out front to take you from park, Epcot to the Animal Kingdom and back?
What we decided was, what Shane had touched upon, is it had to be the way an average guest would see the park, or at least things that were available to you or I if we just showed up at Disney World, or if we were spending a vacation there. So you're welcome to take the buses or the monorails or even cabs if you want, or walk or drive. But having somebody sitting there and waiting for you out front to drive you around is not something that an average guest would have access to. And therefore, by our rules, it's something that wouldn't be allowed. And then obviously there's more blatant forms of cheating, like having a buddy of yours who happens to be a cast member, cut you to the front of the line, or using other people's fast passes, or anything like that would just clearly not be allowed. It's got to be basically a legitimate, a legitimate attempt to the way you would legitimately view the tour of the park, only with a much better plan and a lot more focus.
Okay. Gotcha. And I saw the video that you guys have out on parkgeology.com, and all our listeners should definitely check out your site if they haven't already. You guys have some great content up there and a great blog. But the video of, I think when you guys did it in 2013, and halfway through, you guys are running, you're running from, I think, the studios over to Epcot, and it's like halfway through the day, and I think you guys had done 20 something rides already, and you're just crazy tired. I thought that was a pretty noble task to run the mile or so from the studios to Epcot, but oh my god.
It was miserable, and I don't know if you noticed in the video, but we actually did that twice because we made that park
hop.
I think maybe in both directions, but yeah, it was at the time we thought the fastest way to get between those two parks, rather than going out to the parking lot or waiting on a bus or something like that.
Right, and go back out on World Drive, and then by the time you get over there and park and everything. So,
this last attempt, November of last year, we were wearing a pedometer and, Fitbit type of deal, and I don't remember the exact figure, but it was like 22 miles or 23 miles or something like that we covered over the course of the day, and the great majority of that is running. So, you're basically running a marathon over the course of a day while also kind of juggling the equations of where it's going to be the shortest line and what ride's going to close and where you need to be at each point of the day. So it becomes both a physical and mental sort of exercise.
Right. And you guys are documenting this along the way too, right? Every ride you're on, you had your camera out, you're filming this, and was there anyone else with you when you did the challenges, or was it just the two of you?
Yeah,
And to be honest, we had never really, I mean, we had a Twitter account, but we never really engaged in it too much. So that was like our first real, you know, in-depth Twitter experience with live tweeting every ride that we did. And, you know, at the time, we didn't have, you know, a whole lot of followers. We had a few, but like throughout the day, people kept following and really latching onto this story. So by the end of the night, we had just like thousands of followers, which was kind of shocking to us. But, you know, but the only people that could really turn out by then were, like, my family is local, so my family met us. You know, they came to just cheer us on. Animal Kingdom, I think, is where we first saw them, or maybe it was Hollywood Studios. And so they were there, and they just kind of, like, you know, waved. And then it happened to be Father's Day that day, and Peg was gracious enough to spend time away from his family. Well, actually, that was the first round of Father's Day. Yeah, so... So my son and my wife happened to meet us in Animal Kingdom, and they rode Triceratops Spin with us. They got in line and rode it with us. So it was a cool fun thing that I got to do.
That's pretty.
What was fun about the second attempt? So remember the first attempt, the Father's Day attempt, that was the one that got rained out. The second attempt was the successful one, and we had already picked up a lot of followers, and we had fans from our blog. And people were sort of into the idea. We announced it a little ahead of time. So a big surprise to us was along the way, we would have fans show up and cheer us on and track us down. At one point, there was even a group of people who had homemade signs.
Wow.
We got off, I think it was Splash Mountain, and was heading to the railroad, and there's a... you know, really cool group of people standing there holding up, you know, Parkeology signs. Several other times we would be on a ride, and because we were live tweeting, people who just happened to be in the park would sort of hone in on our location, and then when we came off the rides, would be standing there clapping and cheering for us. In a few occasions, they actually got on and rode with us. That was really a lot of fun and an unexpected surprise during that whole thing.
Wow.
It gave us a surprising burst of energy because, you know, you're tired, you've been on your feet all day going hard, and then all of a sudden there's people cheering for you. You feel almost obligated to run to show them that you're really into this and doing it. So it gave us a burst of energy several times.
Right. You kind of get the extra motivation of the whole park behind you. I guess the first time you did it, I don't know if this existed, but FastPass Plus and the whole, you know, My Magic experience, how has that changed or not changed how you guys approach the challenge?
Well, if you want me to take a chance,
no, go ahead.
It's really fundamentally, you know, I'll just touch on it and then I'll let Shane go into some detail, but, you know, the first attempt, it was WDW 47. They shut down the Backlot Movie Tour, and they shut down Maelstrom, and then they opened Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which got it back up to 46. But the big change was the FastPass Plus, and that's a very limiting program that actually is designed to, you know, because it's designed to distribute the crowds around the park, it actually creates lines where there never used to be lines. Rides that used to be complete walk-ons, like, say, Imagination at Epcot, suddenly can have 20-minute waits. So I'll let Shane go into some more detail, but it really adds a wrinkle that in many ways makes it more difficult.
Yeah, it really messed with what our original plan had been, because under the old FastPass system, you could get a fast, you know, you're getting them one at a time, but then you could get them as soon as you end your FastPass window, or, you know, you could get another one as soon as your previous FastPass window was up, or 2 hours had elapsed, whatever came first. So our big plan in the first time around was to account for the big rides by using FastPass. So we had a plan to FastPass both Soarin' and Toy Story Mania, which are the two hardest FastPasses to get at the time. But we were able to do that by park hopping back and forth. We got our FastPass for Toy Story Mania at the studios, and then 2 hours later we were in Epcot in time to get a Soarin' FastPass before they ran out. With FastPass Plus, you're limited to three FastPasses. You pick them all up front, and they can only be in the same park. Now, there are some extra wrinkles to the FastPass Plus program where after your 3-year use, you can start getting more. But that really put us in a bind as far as minimizing the weights on those big rides. So we had to restructure the whole plan. It basically just caused us to tear down the old plan and rebuild it and took down the FastPass Plus.
Yeah, I mean, you only get the three per park, so, you know, you must have to kind of take a gamble with, all right, you know, we know it's going to be busy at Magic Kingdom in the morning, for example, let's dump all our eggs into that basket and get those three out of the way, and then go on from there. Is that kind of how you approach it with the FastPass Plus now?
Well, there's a definitive strategy at this point, and it's really outlined in our video and in our approach. And it's not all that complicated, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. There are three rides that you have to deal with some sort of Fast Pass or Fast Pass-like situation. You've got Toy Story Mania. You know, you're going to be waiting in that for an hour if you don't have a Fast Pass. You've got Soarin', same situation. And you've got Seven Dwarfs. So the way we handled it is you Fast Pass, you do Toy Story Mania first thing in the morning. So you're actually starting off at the studios park. You knock that out without a Fast Pass. You're just first in line and get there first. You've got your Soarin' Fast Pass sometime in the middle of the day. You use that. And then your Dwarves, you wait until it's the very last ride of the day where you step into line right before the park closes. And again, you do not have a Fast Pass for that. So you really only need the Fast Pass for one ride, and the other two you can handle at opening and close.
Okay. That was one of the questions that Mike and I were talking about before we had you guys on here. You know, was Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, because just knowing the capacity of that ride, and you know, it's never less than like a 90-minute wait. You know, if you go on the Disney app, or if you go on, you know, something like Touring Plans, for example, it's always going to be the longest ride right now. So how to take on that beast in itself?
Yeah, you get on at 1 in the morning is how you take on that.
The other real challenge, which I think a lot of people that are just casually watching it, they don't really understand. And in fact, we've seen comments on like our YouTube video or thing where people say, "Oh yeah, like I've done that before. I've ridden, you know, every ride," but they don't really understand that to account for every ride is a lot harder than it looks like, because the rides are, they all have different, at least a lot of them have different opening and closing times that are very even from the park's opening and closing time. So something like the Main Street Vehicles at Magic Kingdom, they only run that thing from 9 a.m., which is the park opening, till 10:15 a.m. So you only have an hour and 15-minute window to hit that, which means that you're going to be at Magic Kingdom at some point very early in the morning. So to make all these variables fit together, you really have to be creative and come up with, you know, we're going to use our Fast Passes here, we're going to be at this park at this time, and we really did script the whole thing out around those different rides. Closure times.
It also brings up a good point that in order to ride every ride, you have to find a day that every ride is open, which is surprisingly difficult. Great majority of the year, including right now, one ride or two rides will be closed for refurbishment. It's somewhat unique to have a major ride closed in the summer, like Pirates of the Caribbean happens to be closed right now. But when people who don't really understand it say, "Oh yeah, go during the off season," they don't understand that you'd be failing before you even begin, because there'll be rides that are shut down.
Right. I was going to ask that too. I mean, there's been a lot of refurbs recently. What is this? You know, when have you guys done this as far as seasonality wise? Is it? I mean, I can't imagine doing it in the summer is a smarter thing, but. Is it, have you tried to do it towards the winter time, or is there any better time of the year to try to pull this off?
Really, I mean, you're limited. Like Ted just mentioned, because of the refurbishments, they tend to have every ride opening during peak season. So, So around Christmas time, every ride will be operating, but the parks will be slammed and busy.
Right.
And when we tried it the first time, we actually did it in the summer. You know, it's, you know, June 19th or something like that. It was Father's Day. And it was really hot. And we actually, and Ted can attest to this even more so, because, you know, I was actually carrying a water bottle, and Ted was just snagging drinks where he could. But, like, the dehydration really does get to you in the summer. But that was the only window we had when every ride was operating, because it was a peak season time.
Right.
Now, when we did our successful run, it happened to be early November, so just before the Thanksgiving crush. But that was also the first window where something was open. I think the railroad had been down for 3 months. And then all of last summer, the Astro Orbiter and the Windmill People Mover were down for the whole summer. So it was, you really are just limited based on whatever window Disney gives you.
Generally speaking, your opportunities to do it are also going to be the most busy, crowded time. Another factor to think about here that really makes a massive difference is if you find a time that all the rides are open, which will typically be, you know, like we said, summer or holidays, there are then individual days within that time period that may have longer hours than other days. So we did it successfully on a day when the parks, including the magic hours, were open for 17 hours. So the way we determine that is just the time between when the first park of the day opens and the last park of the day closes, in our case, was 17 hours. There are other days that there might be open 18, 19, or even 20 hours. And as you could imagine, it's far, far easier to do it on a day when it's open 20 hours than a day when it's open 17 hours. But whether it was just sort of bad luck or stupidity on our part, we ended up taking it on and tackling it. In fact, the first time we did it, we only had 16 hours. So we've always done it in relatively short days. And probably more than anything else, that time factor is what dictates the difficulty.
I can imagine, and something like the like you guys were saying, extended magic hours for resort guests, that would not be something that would be within the rules, right? Because if it has to be something that everyone has access to.
We did say the resort hours were allowed because I know that not every resort guest or not every guest at Disney has access to them, but you know, it's a standard thing, and most guests that are at Disney are probably staying on property at some point.
Gotcha.
So we allow the extra magic hours. But remember that at 17 hours a day with 46 rides, you're averaging just under 3 rides an hour. That's a really hard pace to maintain. And that's why those extra, even, you know, an extra hour or so will really help make it just, you know, that much easier.
And you have to remember, that's 3 rides an hour, including all the park hops and everything, you know, factored into that. And including certain rides like Universal Energy that are nearly an hour just for that one ride. So you really have to be moving when you're doing it in that few hours.
Right, right. So what's next up for the WW46 Challenge? I know, you know, going on the site on Parkeology, there's a list of a lot of people who've tried to attempt it at various hour increments. Do you guys have anything planned for your next attempt?
Well, we always, you know, the challenge is always you don't want to repeat yourself. And I mean, I think that, you know, we actually, you know, enjoy doing this challenge ourselves just for fun now. It's not something that we do, you know, to try to get promotion or anything like that. But we're always, you know, brainstorming potential ideas of things, ways that we could do something a little bit different. I don't know if anything's really stuck yet right now.
Yeah. After we did the first one, the 47 attempt, and, you know, Shane had mentioned, I don't think we realized how physical it was going to be and how straining it was going to be, especially in the middle of summer. So we were just beat at the end of it. I mean, we could barely walk, and I was severely dehydrated. So both of us said, we're never doing this again. That's it. We proved it could be done. We're never doing it again. And then, you know, some time goes by, and you know, your attitude changes and you want to get it done and you want to really do it for real and not just prove that it can be done, but actually do it. So, you know, we did it that second time and we proved it could be done. But I'm not sure if there's a point to going back and just repeating it. But who knows? There might be bigger and better things to come along at some point.
All right. That's great. Again, we're on with our special guest from Parkeology.com, the inventors and current record holders of the WW 46 Challenge, Ted Tamburo and Shane Lindsay, joining us on the Resort Years Hotline. Guys, we usually like to ask any guests we have on the show this question. We had our good buddy Drunk at Disney on last couple weeks. What do you guys think of the overall direction of the parks right now? I know that's kind of open-ended question, but you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, the studios is sort of a mess right now. Disney Springs is coming online soon, which will be nice. You know, Avatar Land's, you know, being built over Animal Kingdom, and Epcot sort of up in the air, and there's a lot of aging attractions there. What are both of your takes on kind of just the overall direction of Walt Disney World right now?
Why don't you go first?
You let me go first, okay. I think, you know, this is actually a topic that Ted and I discuss quite frequently. You know, and it comes in waves, too. I mean, there's some things that, obviously, I get frustrated by. I get frustrated by the fact that they can't seem to build new attractions in any sort of reasonable time frame. Avatar was announced, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago now, and it's still 2 years away. It seemed like it took them forever to get the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and even things like this new track for Toy Story Mania and a new theater for Soarin' seem like they take forever to build. Meanwhile, down the street, Universal's pumping out, you know, Harry Potter Land clones everywhere and King Kong rides and things like that. So that to me gets a little frustrating. I feel like Disney should be able to move at a faster pace.
Right.
Like, why do we not have a Star Wars land yet? I mean, it seems like such a no-brainer. They're going to wait until the third movie in the new trilogy is released before they finally get something open. So that part, you know, I find frustrating. But I still think that there's things that tend to get overreaction from on the internet, like Avatar. I'll use Avatar as an example. Everyone seems to hate the idea of Avatar. And they have good points about the fact that it's, you know, that nobody's really connected to the film, even though it's the largest, you know, highest grossing film of all time, and that nobody really has, like, a personal, you know, emotional connection to it. But I happen to think the Avatar land's going to be fantastic, and that, you know, as long as you can walk into it without knowing a thing about the movie, and I think you're going to love it. So I think that they're still capable of delivering really good quality experiences, but on the other hand, you do see a lot, especially at Walt Disney World, you see a lot of focus on things like Fast Pass Plus or Disney Springs or, you know, a lot of mobile stuff, mobile device, you know, integration and things like that, which, you know, they don't really excite me as an old school park fan.
Right.
Yeah, the thing that frustrates me is, you know, to give you a little background here, guys, you know, I'm old enough to have been around these parks for a long time now, and I was, you know, I've seen all of the parks open, and I was at when I was, you know, an early teenager when it first opened, and it was, you know, I've been around even pre-Eisner years, so I kind of saw the parks go through different ebbs and flows. And Shane's a little younger than I am, but not too much, so he's got a similar perspective. I've also happened to have been to all the different parks around the world, so you know, I have a good perspective of the way they run in Japan or the way they run in Hong Kong or what have you.
Sure.
And what bugs me and frustrates me about the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, you know, probably at least 15 years, maybe more, of Disney World, which is really the park that I grew up with. I used to work there when I was a kid. It seems like much of their focus is on things that they can market, that they can point to as being advantages without actually building great experiences. So, for example, FastPass Plus and the whole My Magic band system and everything. They spend $1 billion or $1.5 billion to do this.
Right.
When, you know, I honestly think the reason that is in effect is because it means that they can keep their guests in stores and restaurants more than on rides. And ultimately, that means a lot more money for Walt Disney Company. It does not mean a better experience for the guests. And it certainly doesn't mean more or better rides for park fans like we are. So from that point of view, it's frustrating. I will say, though, that I think we're on the verge of having some new and exciting things happen. Avatar Land, like Shane said, I don't, you know, the Avatar connection is meaningless to me, but it does, by all accounts, seem like they're going to execute it extremely well. And that should be an exciting addition. And I'm sure when they finally announce the Star Wars stuff, which I'm anticipating to happen in July, and yes, it'll be a long time for them to build it, but I think that they're, my guess is that they're really going to do that right, and they've been taking their time because they really want to make sure that they have more than just a couple spinner rides and, you know, a new movie for Star Tours or something like that.
Right,
I think they're really going to do it the right way, and hopefully that'll, you know, really be exciting.
Yeah, it's I think Mike and I both, we kind of harp on the same points that you both just said, just about the time it's taken for WDI and the parks to get, you know, to kind of recreate, or even to announce the new direction for some of this stuff, you know, especially when it comes to the studios. The whole, you know, FastPass Plus and My Magic Experience, it's been kind of a failure. You know, I think it, in a lot of ways, it's given Disney the opportunity, like you were saying, Ted, to really not only make more money off them, but also pinpoint where guests are, what their habits are, what they're doing, to then sell them more stuff in the end. But, you know, the fact that we just recently heard they're not bringing FastPass Plus and My Magic Experience to Disneyland. That in itself kind of seems like a failure to me, that they spent $1 billion+ on this program and they're not rolling it out, you know, across the parks, even here in the U.S. So it's...
Well, you know, Disneyland and Disney World are very different places that have very different demographics, and I surprise me, and I wouldn't view that as an indictment to the failure of Magic Band to My Magic Plus. I don't think Disneyland suited for it. But all one has to do to get a state of Disney World right now is take a walk through Epcot Center or take a walk through the Disney Studios. Both of those parks are in a really, really sad state, in my opinion. Epcot is so far adrift from what it originally meant to be, that when I'm there, I honestly, and I don't mean to say this as a joke, I honestly don't even understand what they're trying to be. Or what, you know, it's partly some thrill rides, it's got some animated characters, it still has this sort of kind of a World's Fair vibe, but,
right,
you know, that's the thing that to me, bothers me the most, and I'm afraid that they might not be any short-term answer to it, because from Disney's point of view, with the market that they're going after for Disney World, which is really not a guy like Shane who lives there and loves it, but more like people who are coming in once every 5 years or once every 10 years to see it, and they know that there's enough there just as it is to keep those crowds coming.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, and they're getting record attendance, and then they do something like, you know, Shane and I were just talking about this the other day. I am not a big fan of this Frozen deal they're doing. Aside from the fact that a fantasy land, in my opinion, doesn't belong in the World Showcase. A few years ago, I did an April Fool's post where I said they were building Wars Land inside Epcot, and that World Showcase was going to become the Galactic Showcase. and it seemed like a crazy, silly idea, you know, that could only fly on April Fool's, and yet here we are a few years later, and they are in essence doing that. They're sticking fictional lands inside World Showcase, which was obviously always set up to be a travel log of real countries. But to get to my point, I think that they did that simply because it's the cheapest and fastest way for Disney World to get a Frozen ride, and therefore
yep.
they can market that Frozen ride and therefore get more people into the parks. In other words, it's being driven by marketing rather than being driven by, hey, how can we build the best Frozen ride we could build? Would probably not be built in World Showcase and probably would not be retrofitted into a short little World Showcase ride.
Right.
And if you look at the similar ride that they're building in Tokyo Disney Sea, a park that really never compromises when it comes to its attractions, even though they haven't really announced exactly what that ride's going to be, you can just see by the scale of the concept art that it's much grander, much larger, and seems to be more focused on giving a great attraction and less focused on, hey, does it just give us something to market?
Right. Yeah, and I think part of that is custom built for the, you know, the piece of intellectual property. And in Disney World's case, I think they looked at what's the weakest link in World Showcase, and they said, well, you know, that old Maelstrom thing's been there a while. You know, let's knock the dust off of that and close it down and try and throw a new Frozen skin on it and see what we can get. And I think you're right. That I think it's, you know, what could they slap the Frozen sticker on and you know, the fastest possible way. And make the most impact. And we've seen it at the studios too. I mean, obviously there's been plenty of Frozen, you know, parties, and just right now they launched the Frozen Summer spectacular over there. So that whole thing, it really is intriguing, and what happens next with Frozen, especially with Epcot. And I 100% agree with you both. It's almost sad the state that park is in right now. Especially on the World Showcase side, because like you guys were saying, you know, it is part thrill ride, part educational, part characters. You know, now there's, you know, Nemo, I get, you know, at the Living Seas Pavilion. So how all that fits together is very confusing. And then you have, you know, something like the Imagination Pavilion with Figment and that ride in the theater. What happens to that? You know, so
energy sitting there.
Energy, exactly. Right. Right, so that's one park that I think could definitely use some capital. It's you know, just, I'll end on this. It's a rumor out, I guess a pretty credible one, that Bob Iger was at the park on Tuesday, had stayed over there on Monday night, was there Tuesday, and there was a board of directors meeting at Walt Disney World this week, and I supposedly the agenda was Hollywood Studios and the rebuild, and then also financing for the projects. Again, that's a rumor that we've read on some of the boards, but it's about time, and I hope, and I think a lot of us fans do, that at the D23 Expo in August, that something comes out about this finally, and they can finally say that there is going to be a Star Wars themed land at Hollywood Studios, and you know it's gonna come within our lifetimes. So. So, anyway,
yeah,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think if they don't announce a Star Wars land, you know, you might have some sort of revolution take place, because, it would actually be fundamentally, I'm blanking on the word, but just, I cannot believe I can't remember. My thoughts are escaping me, but it would be just such a huge mistake that you would actually have to consider firing the board of directors and getting a new CEO.
A mutiny?
A mutiny.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to buy Star Wars, which I think was a brilliant move, but then not put it in the park.
Right.
That would be beyond just, it would almost be criminal. It would be such a big mistake. So I'm sure you're going to see a Star Wars land. The Epcot thing is a harder thing to deal with because
totally.
it's a tough nut to crack, and they've screwed it up now so badly
yep.
that it would really take a lot to find a way to unify Future World.
I think that's the biggest issue. I mean, you know, World Showcase, I think, can stand on its own. It could use some freshening up, obviously. Some of those you know, Circle Vision films are definitely old and need to be replaced. And, you know, we know, obviously, Soarin's getting an expansion or at the land, and there's potentially a new film on the way. But, yeah, Future World is just, you know, partially it's the innovation pavilions. What happens with those? And we'll get that in our second part of the show here. But the West Pavilion, there's actually rumors that potentially there could be a Star Wars museum coming to that pavilion, which would be even worse, I think. And it definitely sounds like a Band-Aid, you know, a temporary kind of stopgap for that area. But you're right, that whole Future World area really needs something and quick. And I think, you know, in the next 3 to 5 years, if they can't figure out the answer to that, it's not going to bode well for Epcot attendance. I can't imagine, you know, folks going to show up for the few e-ticket rides over there and, you know, to walk around World Showcase and get a beer, you know.
Well, they got a lot of eggs sitting in that food and wine basket at this point.
Exactly. So I think that pretty much will do it for us guys. Mike, and I think we may have fixed your audio issues. If you're still there, do you have anything else that you wanted to ask Ted and Shane?
No, I don't have much. I learned a lot. Hopefully do you guys hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. No, I really don't have much. You guys were an awesome guest. I learned a lot about how to do this. I've been taking notes on how I can do it myself. And I think if I could just lose another 25 to 50 pounds, I might be able to lose the progress. I'm sorry I wasn't on much.
They should swim by cardiology.com, go to the WDW46 challenge page, and we have it all outlined there. You can register with us. We have all the rules and facts and everything, and, you know, give it a shot. We'll follow along, and if you get on there, you get the glory of official recognition on the cardiology page.
Oh, that's awesome. And hey, I want to get one of your actually, I don't even know if you had. Do you have that ride? Is it a poster with all the ride vehicles?
Yeah, you know, people always ask about the poster. That's something that we put together. And you know, we tried to sell it during the first attempt, and like some of the online stores where we had it, they just kind of, because of the depicted ride vehicles, that they weren't comfortable, intellectual property.
Oh, really?
Be sold. So,
wow.
But right now, I have a shirt that was made, and there probably are a couple of posters floating around, but right now it's just a graphic on the site.
It's a really cool design. Definitely check that out, guys, if you haven't, parkeology.com. Mike, anything else before we let these fellers off the hotline?
No, I just want to thanks guys for coming on. Sorry I wasn't on as much. The wonderful voice that you probably hear if you listen to our podcast is mine. Just with the audio issues again, I apologize. You guys can hold on. What we're gonna do something special for everybody. We're actually gonna make this its own show because there is so much good information in here that we're gonna give you guys. We don't do this for anybody really. We're going to give you guys your own show on our site. So it's just gonna be, you want to listen to these guys talk and do the interview, it's going to be just that, and then we'll come and record another news and stuff before that. So again, guys, I appreciate you so much for coming on. I've learned a lot. I love how you guys, what you guys are feeling about how the parks are going, and great job, Greg, with the interview.
Thank you.
We can all plug Greg on that one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
If you guys want to just hold on real quick, we're going to go ahead and just stop this part of the show and do our little outro, so to speak, and then I'd love to talk to you guys real quick, and then we'll let you guys go, and me and Greg will get on with the next part of the show. You guys okay with that?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, hold on for a second. All right, folks, well, that's going to definitely do it for us here. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview that we had with Ted and Shane from Parkeology. Make sure you go to their Twitter, their website. Greg, go ahead and give all that out right now, and ours.
Yes, Parkeology.com for these guys. And make sure, if you haven't already, if you're not part of the 510 people who follow us on Twitter, please do. Resort at Resort Years, and as always, we love feedback or park touring tips or questions. ResortEars@gmail.com.
Our next show will be July 8th, and we have a special guest, host of Orlando Tourism Report podcast, Ken Story. We'll talk a little more about that in the first part of the show. Hopefully, you're listening. This is the second part of the show. That's how we're going to put it. So. That's going to do it for our full two-part show here for July, what are we here, June 24th, 2015. any questions? Of course, Twitter, Facebook, email, resortears@gmail.com. Greg, go ahead and give everything that you needed. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at Resort Ears. And that's going to do it. Again, Ted and Shane, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody have a magical night. And until the next time, get your ears on. See you, folks.